Hello, everybody, and welcome back to An Enterprise Dish. While we have a familiar face, Mr. Aaron, he is in a slightly new location, but everybody listening to this, if you can't see it, you can probably guess where Aaron is. But Aaron, welcome home, and welcome back.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, I'm sure that people can hear, those who aren't watching, can probably hear a little more reverberation in the background. It's a little different than being in the office, but you know, the great thing is I even wrote a little story on it on LinkedIn about the transition to work from home for us was really super smooth. You know, nonetheless, I think that the biggest challenge now is more morale and motivation, right, than actually just getting people working. So that we're sort of onto the second wave of this whole movement now, but.
Yes, there's absolutely that euphoria of like, all right, we're going to work from home. We're going to eat our food. We're not going to eat out. And that's great for like a week. And then you're into week two and you're like, okay, you know, this is good. We're still going. And then week three, it's like, you know what? I could really go for some Domino's or just like, what, you know, pick whatever you want. And you're like, but anyways, it's, yeah, we are plowing through. My family's home. I'm sure everybody else listening to this is more than likely having family at home as well. And here we are. I will point out, Aaron, we made a prediction last time we talked. I think we both said it was a greater than 50% chance that Microsoft would be canceling many of their conferences throughout the year. And if the official word came out, which is a lot longer than I was honestly anticipating, but Microsoft is officially canceling all internal and external conferences through the end of July of 2021. That is, that's a big move.
Yeah, it is. I mean, well, what's your take? I mean, do you think that it's a wise move, or do you think it's sort of a questionable move to push out that far?
I don't want to say it's a bad move, but what I have heard, and it kind of lines up to this. We'll see if any big changes come, but I think Microsoft is taking a cold and long look at their conference strategy. And they might be kind of rebooting how they do things, is my take. Because the reason why it's interesting that it's through the end of July 2021, which is the end or the first month of their next fiscal year for 2021, slightly confusing, is that it excludes or includes, I should say, Inspire, which is their partner conference. So I think it was very explicit that they said the end of July of 2021, which means their next conference would be Ignite of that year. And so I think that they're looking at Build, they're looking at Inspire, they're looking at Tech Ready, they're looking at just everything that they do, and they're saying, you know what, if we're going to change things up, now's the time to do it.
Sure. I think that, you know, they're also, if you all probably saw the same mail I did, which argued that if the travel restrictions are lifted and things return back to normal, and very generous air quotes around that, people still might have some anxiety about making trips like these.
Yeah.
And I think that that's true and relevant. I also think to your part of your point, Brad, that they're thinking about event strategies as a whole is also true, because if you consider what they plow into these events cost-wise, it is astronomical, right? And so we pay whatever we pay to attend Ignite, $3,000 or $4,000 or something like that. It really doesn't scratch the surface of what the total cost of the event is. It seems expensive to us, and we've got to do all this internal justification of, oh, this is worth me going to and all that. But the reality is that there is a massive, massive investment from organizations that put on these large scale events.
Sure.
And now that they're moving to this virtual frame, the question is, can we extract the same value? And can we use those dollars to, you know, accomplish potentially more, to have better, broader reach from this? But people are also being warned to be cautious about just taking the closed event content and just throwing it out there, right? I mean, that would be a mistake too.
Exactly.
So there's sort of a very careful dance that everyone has to play right now. It's an interesting, we're starting to see, I think, some of these secondary effects or these, I guess the second wave of considerations around the outcome of the pandemic.
Yeah, the downside to all this too, I mean, this is a very obvious statement, is that there's no in-person portion of this. Like, one of my things that I loved about going to Build was that I got to go visit you in your offices, and we got to have drinks very early in the morning, but actually do the podcast in person, just get to chat and hang out. And I mean, that's a huge portion of these events that is just gone. And so That's the big downside.
Yeah, I mean, what replaces that? How do we win back that all of us right now are probably dying for, right? I mean, I'll be really curious what the response is and feedback is to this podcast this time. But yeah, I mean, so much of the value is the intangible and who you bump into, you know, in the hallway when you're not even in the event venue. It's who you run into waiting for a table at dinner in Orlando or whatever, right? At Ignite, I had a bunch of those experiences when I least expected it, right? And there's all of that intangible value of the water cooler conversation, that at an event level happens with people who you wouldn't normally interact with, and there's value you extract from that. So how do you replace that? Is there a replacement for that?
Yeah.
You know, I think those are some of the theoreticals.
Yeah, interesting times. I'm probably going to say that exact phrase for the next several months about, you know, how things are evolving and changing and how people are shifting their strategies and to all that. I mean, from a press side, it's always, you know, we go to these events because we get a lot of background information, things that aren't in the blog post. You know, Microsoft will let us talk to the Brad Andersons, the people of the world, and they say, you know what, you can't write about this, but you can use it for your knowledge. And those, as a writer, that is really, really crucial to helping understand and also tell the narrative of why certain things are happening. And it'll be curious to see how Microsoft approaches that, if they're going to offer up informal just conversations on the side, like at Build, or, you know, we'll find out here in the near future. It'll be different. That's for sure.
No question.
So a couple things on the Windows agenda. Microsoft actually announced this yesterday, and I don't think anybody's too surprised by this, but they are extending support for 1809. It was originally set to expire or end support of May 12th, 2020, and now it has been moved to November 10th, 2020 for now. And I suspect that if this pandemic, knock on all the wood that we can find, is still raging then they'll push it out again. But any gut check there?
they seem to turn this back on the pandemic, saying, oh, people need more time. Mm-hmm. But I wonder if something else is driving this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I guess the skeptic in me wonders if there isn't another factor that's playing in here. Obviously, sure. You know, 1909's out there, and you know, that's what I'm running, obviously working just fine.
Yep.
I feel like it doesn't make a ton of sense to me that this would be that the pandemic would be such a major setback that you couldn't hit Windows Update and let's go. Mm-hmm. Like, I guess, I don't know. I'd be curious for your two cents on that, Brad, because and it also seemed like it was mainly targeted to home users. Isn't that kind of what you picked up too? Like, it was kind of home edition first and the consideration of the home user. So I'm sort of scratching my head about this move, honestly. It's benign. It's not that big of a deal. It's really a function of them having to provide a little more support and keep providing updates for things.
Yep.
But it's also conceivable that many of the updates that would happen on the other supported versions as well. So it may not be, from an engineering perspective, that monumental of an endeavor to keep it going. I don't know.
Yeah, to me, and I don't really disagree with what you said. To me, it just feels like a free gesture. Right? Like, the overhead that Microsoft had to take on to make this announcement was more than likely spent more time on the blog post announcing it than it's actually going to impact the back end. It's a free gesture. It's, you know, what's the negative PR that's going to come out of this? Nothing.
Right. That's sort of my take too, is I don't feel like there, I mean, maybe they were getting a ton of complaints, but I don't know.
I can't imagine that.
We for sure, though, it's easy to forget that we are jaded and live in this little technology bubble where everything is latest and greatest, and we're always earlier-ish adopting, if not very early adopting, so on and so forth. So, maybe I'd be interested to see sort of among, I haven't looked at the data because this is relatively fresh information, but it would be interesting to see among our customer base how many people are on 1809, because there is a case in especially the mid-size enterprise where IT people, usually those organizations have smaller teams, right? We're not talking about tens of thousands of seat organizations that have, you know, a dedicated, you know, Windows kind of management team. These are people who do everything for the endpoint, mobile, PC, and beyond, and maybe have some data center accountability responsibility. So if that's the case, yes, this might be a nod to the fact that most of the world is not as prepared for remote management as, perhaps your organization, my organization
Yeah.
are,
Yeah,
right?
I think that's a fair assessment.
And we're certainly seeing uptake from customers who are really pushing to achieve that, right? So it's a tenuous time to be saying this, but our business has, in a not in an unfair or insensitive way, but has benefited somewhat from the
Sure.
work from home move.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I think that that's not going to last, but in the short term, certainly people have tried to work very hard to make ha have had to make it go, ready or not. And maybe that's made me more the Microsoft point is, the ready or not, here it goes. But we're not going to force you onto a new frame when you're not tooled up for it and create another crisis for you. That's a reasonable kind of way to think about this if we want to give them a fair shake.
The other side benefit too is the bandwidth. If there's people, now we are both blessed that we have high bandwidth connectivity. If you're in an area that is being hit hard, especially like Western Europe, potentially this is just one less thing that needs to go through the pipelines to get to you and might just make life a little bit easier as well.
That is a great point, and I wonder on that point. I wonder. Here's another little contrarian skeptic. I think your point is true. I think that there is a lot of truth to that. I think there's also perhaps a selfish interest in Microsoft's part to say, boy, it'd be way better to have this go through a local area network
Oh,
and
yeah.
have one package come down to the enterprise and go out that way, one to many, rather than have this big package go out to each and every
Sure.
endpoint, and consume what's expensive for Microsoft to deliver as well, when I expect all indications are their cloud delivery capacity is redlined,
Oh,
right?
yeah.
I mean, you've got to believe that all systems, finished service, public cloud, is all cranking, right? AC is on max in those data
Oh
centers.
yeah. I've heard from some listeners, especially in Western Europe, although it's supposed to be, I got some information that looks like maybe some of the congestion is easing up, but I had heard several stories of people who had VMs up and running and they needed to pull them offline to whatever they were going to refresh the software, reboot them or whatever. And when they went to boot them back up, the resources had already been allocated to another customer and they couldn't. So little, just be careful when you spin those things down right now.
Yeah, right. And normal maintenance becomes very abnormal maintenance all of a sudden, right?
Yeah, I
So
think, yeah.
it's sort of an unusual time in that way. And so I think the notion of redundancy in your backup strategy goes beyond just having a data backup, but what's your warm secondary, right? If this is a critical service, you better be careful what you're taking offline. That's a great point.
I would be very curious if there's any listeners out there who work for a cloud service company, but that's not AWS or Azure, one of the smaller, maybe regional clouds. I'd be curious to know how you all are being impacted. I would imagine that, to Aaron's point, that having a secondary regional cloud offering is probably a very lucrative thing to have right now under your belt.
Absolutely, and probably a really wise insurance policy, right? So most of the time, you're probably going to pay a premium. You're going to pay more for a different basket of services, but to have a place to hang your VMs, especially if you've really made the commitment to the cloud like we have, that would be great. Or if you've done also what we have, and many organizations have, keep a little bit on-prem just in case. Right, you can flow it back down and do some magic, and whether you're considered essential services or not, a lot of times it's easy enough to get a VM spun up on your host. So a lot of creativity probably is being required from our listeners right now. We feel for you.
Yeah, definitely do. There's been some other interesting news floating out around our one of our favorite topics of Windows 10 X. X is also very mysterious, which is also kind of interesting because of how Microsoft has been approaching this. So Microsoft, as a quick rehash, Microsoft has another version of Windows called Windows 10 X, and it's very heavy on containers, specifically like Win32 containers are the big feature, at least for me. Anyways, Microsoft was going to demo or effectively launch this OS on a new product called the Surface Neo. The Surface Neo has now been delayed at least into 2021, and that's calendar year, not Microsoft fiscal year. And then Windows 10 X is also changing course as well, with a focus on single screens rather than the dual screens. Just curious if this, you know, any thoughts on this? I mean, we don't know because Microsoft isn't really telling us this yet, but I'd be curious on your thoughts.
I think I remain somewhat of a skeptic on Windows 10 X, just because, you know, we've kind of seen this story before a couple times. Mm-hmm. But hardware engineering is hard, and it's going to be even harder at a distance. And so, as one of my my most respected engineering buddies says, the whiteboard always compiles.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
you can do all the work, all the CAD CAM work, you can do, you know, all the prototyping, and then when you get it together, is it really going to live up to the quality standards that are demanded by consumers? And, you know, Microsoft knows from its hard experience that if you don't hit that bar, you are going to fail. And it's not like software where you can just sort of be like, okay, well, we'll, you know, flatten and reload and start over again. Like, you've got $1 billion of investment into manufacturing and devices now that nobody wants, right? It's going to be the Atari, you know, ET video game that ends up in the landfill, right? So they can ill afford that. Plus the fact that with this business of working from a distance, when this is such a very collaborative undertaking, I think is going to, this is one of the places we're going to see all of that slow down, unfortunately. Interestingly though, on the flip side, I think we're going to see the data center space continue to move right ahead, right? They don't have sort of the same requirements in terms of the tactile durability of a device, right? It's well known, it's understood. They're trying to get more clock cycles out of it. They're trying to get more density out of it. And those endeavors are underway. There's a massive amount of revenue coming at it because of the success of the cloud. So we're going to see, I think, two different things going on is maybe a way to think about it.
Yeah, the only other thing I would point out potentially on that Surface Neo device, I think we can all kind of agree that it was going to be a premium priced product, for knowing for what it was. And launching a premium priced product after a pandemic, or what is more than likely going to be a recession here, may not be the best time to do such a thing.
I think that you're absolutely right. They're thinking about all those factors, I'm sure of it, including when they release. And if they miss that release window, they might as well push an entire year, because all of that's very, very neatly orchestrated around hundreds, if not thousands, of factors. The other thing to consider here is that Microsoft has been extremely aggressive in their leadership around sort of this pandemic management, right? Mm-hmm. They were the first to go work from home. They have what I believe is one of the most generous leave policies for childcare, at least in the United States, right? I mean, I think other countries, Europe is miles ahead of us as always, but you know, they're giving their people 12 weeks to just help educate their children. Mm-hmm. And these are bold and incredibly generous leadership moves. Not only within the enterprise and for all the employees, but in the community, in the tech community, and in the sort of just world community, right? I mean, to be able to say that this is a really important time to carve that out for people. Not everyone has the ability to do that. We don't have the flexibility to give our people that much time. We're doing as much as we can.
Sure.
But I think some of that generosity is going to come back in impacts that are going to cause some of these delays. But I think the great thing is they're being realistic about it. They're not rushing and saying, oh, we've got to hurry and get this to market. You know, they've got enough other bets going on, and they're being very rational about it. So I kind of like I kind of like this notion of taking their time, and I would rather see, especially as a skeptic, I would rather see 10x go out with better kind of fit and finish, better overall quality, landing on devices that have a very nice kind of build quality to them and a feel to them that perform extremely well. We all want something awesome like that, right? So that's, I think, the best case scenario.
Yeah, we will see. I think the story will hopefully be, hopefully Microsoft will clarify some of the this direction stuff. We should be getting some new Surface hardware here in the very near future in terms of Surface Go 2 and Surface Book 3, and then also the previously announced the Surface earbud they're supposed to launch this spring. And it looks like by all signs those things are about to come out the gate. And it wouldn't be surprising if when Microsoft makes that announcement, they also say, "Hey, here's how our strategy is evolving going forward with the stuff that we'd already previously announced." So be on the lookout
Awesome.
for that.
Yes.
And then the other big thing worth pointing out is Patch Tuesday. There's one notable item, unless Aaron has another one, but it's CVE-2020-1027 is a bug in the Windows kernel that lets attackers elevate privileges to run code with kernel access. Kind of a big deal. And so just be on the lookout for that patch. There are some other ones out there related to Adobe flaws within the OS itself, but that's the
Yeah,
big
and
one.
some of those actually are rated like as more critical or more severe, interestingly. And this round of patches includes 19 like security flaw. It addresses 19 security flaws. So yeah, this one is particularly onerous seeming, but this is in a landscape of a lot going on. So this
Yeah,
is
very
not
well
to be
put.
taken lightly. And I think this speaks to maybe another broad issue is that these kinds of times are sort of greenfield for wild exploitation,
Sure.
right? So anytime there's a social disruption, the exploiters come out of the woodwork. And so I think all of us in this line of business need to be poised to remind our end users and friends and colleagues to be aware of and ready for all this crazy stuff that's coming down.
It's make sure you patch. That's kind of the big thing. And also make sure you're careful of the emails you're clicking on too, because there's a lot of those nefarious actors out there trying to take advantage of, "Oh, please log into your Office 365 to prevent COVID in your environment," and then bam, your credentials are gone. So how's everything else going, Aaron, up in the Seattle area? You're obviously working at out of the house.
We will be. I don't know if all of our listeners know, but Washington is where the fun began in the United States, and so many tragic stories. But really, the interesting thing again is that Microsoft was such an aggressive early leader. And so many other large organizations followed suit that I think we got ahead of it. So in terms of the United States, we are in an increasingly favorable position. However, the kind of statewide stay-at-home policy is, going into the month of May now. School is canceled for the rest of the school year. And that's trickling into all of the other things, all the extracurricular activities, the club sports. So there's a lot of kind of rapid reassessment of sort of the landscape and the world and the way that things are going to work going forward. But we're optimistic and hopeful, especially for, sort of just the health and wellness of the community, that things will continue, that the curve will stay flat, that the whatever that metric is that should be below one stays below one, and we continue to rebound. But we're just super, super fortunate that we're in a position to be able to continue the work that we're doing and do a little bit to help the community with the abundance of IT resources we have. In particular, we're donating, headsets and webcams and PCs and, sharing out the limited number of masks that we had and things like that. So it's strange to be talking about this in a way, really, but at the same time, just relieved that we're starting to see some glimmers of a recovery.
Yeah.
You know, how are things out by you? I mean, it's got to be kind of the same story, yeah?
Yeah, so it's interesting when people talk about states that kind of got ahead of the curve. There's Washington, and then there was like New York, and then Ohio, which is where, for those who
Really?
aren't familiar, I'm in Cincinnati, Ohio, and so they were very, very aggressive. And actually, locally here, there are cases. There's absolutely cases around here, but from a widespread issue, it's not bad here. Like as in comparison to say a New York or a Washington. But everything's closed. It's the exact same thing. You know, we've been home now for about a month. My wife is going to be home probably for the next couple months, I would imagine. My child is home. No extra curricular activities, trying to do remote education. Just, you know, the same challenges that everybody else has, and just keep watching that curve and then hoping that the big question here is how do we reintegrate back into society in a safe and meaningful way so that in September we're not all back here, you know, shut back down again. So we'll see.
Yeah, I'd be really curious to know from listeners the things that they're doing to sort of create a productive environment. Because for some of us, you know, working from home isn't that unusual, but working from home with, you know, the kids home and your partner around and all these other, you know, distractions, you know, I'd be really curious for the kind of the hacks that people have come up with to maintain productivity and focus. Number one, number two, what our listeners think are going to be sort of the permanent, kind of long-term changes that are going to fall out of this, because that's what I've heard and had lots of conversations about is, you know, with the organizations that I've been helping and advising is, hey, you know, we're thinking about the future completely differently now. Like we're not thinking about this the way we were. So I'm curious, especially from our technical audience, the things that they're thinking might change.
Yeah, and please tag us on Twitter if you're on that platform when you respond, or you can email us. Those insights that we get from the community are what help honestly drive some of the insights that we talk about on this podcast, or just provide different
Sure.
vantage points into how we approach things, or just generally talk about them. So we always appreciate that outreach from everybody who's been tuning in over the, what is it? It's almost, it's been 2 years.
Years, yeah, a year and a half now.
Wow. Time really does fly, and hopefully it'll fly a little faster in the next couple of months.
I'm back into this, yes, sir.
But Aaron, we very much appreciate you taking time working out of your house, dealing with everything going on, and everybody tuning in. Make sure you hit the subscribe buttons down below if you haven't. Reach out with any questions or comments, and we'll catch all of you right back here next time.